Thanks for tuning in to our podcast, Leaders, Followers, and everything in between. We love having you here. It is our mission to bring you all of the latest and greatest tips and skills and know-how and how to make your personal life and business life the very best it can be. We know that you have it in you. We believe in you. We just want to show you how.
She is a business coach.
She is an author.
She is a community leader. She is a philanthropist. She's going to be talking to you today about how you can pivot through a pandemic. Yes, I said it. We're going to be pivoting through a pandemic.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome
the Honorable Sharon Gill. How you doing today, Sharon?
I'm doing well. Thank you for that. I find it a little bit hilarious, but thank you for that wonderful introduction. I just so love your sense of, you're just so open and free spirit. I just love that about you, Gibson.
Thank you so much. Likewise, you are just an amazing person and you've had a very, very, very amazing career.
I strongly believe that whatever you have to share today will be very, very helpful to my audience. And, you know, Spider-Man got bit by a spider and he turns into this incredible superhero. So what's your native story?
You know, whenever I get asked this question, I come up with the same answer. My favorite comic book character is Veronica from the Archie comics. And people, you know, Veronica was not a very liked person, but the reason why I liked Veronica is because she always exhibited so much confidence. You know, she says what she wants and she kind of gets what she wants. And from as young as I can remember, that's just how I was conditioned to be. I think maybe because of my dad and his confidence in me and my mom and her confidence in me. I just always felt like, well, there's nothing that you can desire if you put your mind to it that you can't achieve. And so I really just admired Veronica in the Archie comics.
And you know, and it's one of the things that I believe in is how to live a life without limits, right?
And I was telling this young man that I mentored the other day that
I told him that
I feel like many times in life, many people fail in life, not because they aim too high and miss, it's because they aim too low and hit. Pause. Think about that for a second. As human beings, we have a propensity for negativity. It's that amygdala brain. It's that reptilian brain that we have. Back in the day, we used to always have to worry about us having to protect ourselves against the lions and the tigers and the natural elements. And so we had to build up a threshold of fear and negativity, because if we weren't thinking negative, we probably wouldn't have been able to survive as a species. Now, we still have that propensity. For example, someone can say a million glowing things to you on social media, but that's not what you're going to focus on. You will focus on that negative thing that person has said to you, that one negative comment. How do you recommend dealing with negativity?
Well, you're right. It's about mindset for me. So I have a daily practice of what I call God formations, right? And I actually included these God formations, and of course I've written on confidence. And my God formations are really just scriptures that I've taken out of the Bible. Scriptures like, I am the apple of God's eyes. Scriptures like, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. You know, scriptures like, nothing is impossible with God. So I have my daily God formations moment. So I am prepared, because negativity is always around us, right? We can't avoid it. It's in our families. It's on the television. It's in the news. It's at our workplace. So you have to, as the scripture would say, you have to put on that armor. I put on that armor of God's words every morning to just go out there, almost like a battle, you know, just like my battle garment. But I got it with affirmations like, well, you know, and I remember Rick Warren saying something years ago, that hurt people. So that's, I look at negativity like, well, they're being negative because they're hurt. So how can I serve them? So I just turn it around its head. I'm not saying I don't get affected, but it doesn't last too long because I turn it around.
And as a life coach, what tools and what strategies you use when you have a client or someone that you're mentoring that falls into that depression, how do you get them to swing back to the positive?
Well, many times when people are depressed, they say, I said, why are you depressed? You know, in general, people say, I don't know. Why are you anxious? I don't know. We always know. We just don't want to face it. So what I get my clients to do, it may take them 2 or 3 sessions, is to really go within and face that angst, face that fear, face that worry, face that thing that's causing them this anxiety, this depression, is to go within. And I guide them in that process of just going within. Go back to the childhood, go back to those scripts, because we all have scripts playing in our heads, right?
Okay.
We have scripts from childhood. You know, it may be a parent who said in a careless conversation, you won't amount to anything.
Wow.
That is so prevalent. You're worthless, prevalent. You'll never drive, you'll never this, you'll never that. And so those scripts are just lodged in our heads. And as we become adults, they're still there playing out. I mean adults, 50s, 60s, they're like babies. Wow. When they go within, they're back to that same conversation. They're like babies and they never resolved it. So I get them to actually write down the pain points, journaling, almost like writing a memoir. And just look at it, take it out of head and mind and put onto paper where it has less meaning.
Wow, wow.
And facing that inner conversation, because that's what causes it. You know, what is anxiety? Worry about the future or worry about the past. That's what creates, you know, depression is worrying about the past, what happened already. Anxiety is about worrying about the future, what hasn't happened yet.
That's beautiful. So, can you say that again? That is so profound.
Yes, I mean, it's not original to me, but depression is worrying about the past, what has happened. I'm depressed about what has happened, or I'm anxious about what is to come.
Okay.
So a lot of the adults who are depressed is because of something that's happened in the past, something they went through. It could just be even a conversation. It could be something physical. But they have the power that they have to change that is to taking it out of their head, out of that space. And for me, putting it in writing, looking at it, facing it, and comparing it to who you really are. How does God see you?
Wow.
And also reframe the narrative. Exchange those negative scripts for positive ones, especially if you're a person of faith. For what does God say about you?
I love that. I love that. And you know, it's very powerful, because I remember hearing the story of a woman who every Thanksgiving every year she would take the turkey and she would cut the legs off. And as she would cut the legs off, one day she just asked herself, why do I cut the legs off the turkey every year? So she went to her mother, because her mother obviously taught her how to cook, and she said, Mom, why is it that we always cut the legs off the turkey? It doesn't make any sense to me. And her mother went to her mother and says, Mom, yeah, when you taught me how to prepare turkeys, why do we cut the legs off? And her mom just looked at them, both of them, and said, oh, I forgot to tell you. Back in the day, during the Depression, we had such a small, small oven that if I didn't cut the leg off, it wouldn't fit into the oven. So here we are. So here we are, multiple generations later. And I think that's what happens, right? That's what persists. Some of the old things of our past keeps creeping into our present. And yes. I call it stinking thinking, right?
Yeah.
Letting the top thoughts of the past, limiting beliefs. And we got to defeat those limiting beliefs, especially now. It's so, so prevalent. Everyone keeps telling me. I had a business associate call me the other day, and I felt like he was just dumping on me, just telling me like, oh, business is down and all this stuff. And usually I'm a listening ear. And I told him, I said, Bruce, I said, listen, brother. I said, man, I appreciate you. I said, but I'm at a certain vibrational level right now that all of this negativity, all you're doing right now is telling me about the problems. All right, let's sit here. Let's work on some solutions. Because all of this negativity and you telling me like how bad the economy is. I just talked to my congressman. This is what he told me. And I just checked with the stock. I'm like, you're stressing me out. I said, let's do this. I said, I understand where you're coming from, but let's work on some solutions, because there's two levels of solutions, right? I put them in two categories. The first category is things that I can control. The second category is, I call it, that's God's business. I can't control it.
Right.
So whenever it's like the weather and all that sort of stuff, the economy, the stock market, that's above my pay grade, Sharon. I can't control that. But I go over to this box over here that I know that I can control, which is my attitude, what's in my sphere of influence, my personal economy. I can't control the big economy, but I can't control my personal economy. So
that's
I tend to focus on the things that I can control. What do you think about that?
That is so true. You know, when you talk about even the turkey story, I was reminded of, I'm rereading again, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey, right?
I love that. I love
about 19 years ago. And I just picked it up again. I'm listening to it on Audible. And something that he said reminded me of the turkey story. How we are so conditioned, right, in our own bubbles to see things a certain way. And he get disturbed by the picture of the young girl and the old woman that he had shown one group quickly a picture of a young girl and one group quickly a picture of an old woman. And then he combined the picture into one picture. And how when they were asked to look at it, all the group that saw the young girl, all they saw was a young girl. And the group that saw the old woman, all they saw in the combined picture was an old woman. And this is a picture that's been going on the internet for years. And the reason was because they were preconditioned to see that thing. And so when he got them together to explain, okay, here's how you can see the old woman. It took some time, but then they were able to see it from a different perspective. And it's just the same. We fall victims of tradition, and we get so stuck in that paradigm, really. And you know, that's why he's always coining the phrase that paradigm shift. And what you just said, you know, about your friend, and what you can control and what you can't control. It's so true, because the only thing we can control is really our attitude about what we're going through.
Yes.
I wrote something yesterday that I said, you know, you're looking for control, but remember, you were never in control. God is the only person who's really in control. You
That's
know,
true.
We want control right now during this pandemic. But we never really had control. If we had control, this would not have happened, correct?
That's true.
We would have been going through this pandemic. So, you know, only thing we can control, you and I right now, is how we're going to get through this pandemic, what's going to be our attitude in this moment.
I love that.
Honestly, the only thing we can control.
I love that. I heard one of my good friends say one time, he said, when you change the way you see things, the things you see will change.
Absolutely.
So profound. So we got your native story. Where are you from? Where exactly are you from?
I was born in Jamaica. I came to America when I was 21 years old.
Wow. Okay. That's great. So you're an American.
Yeah.
Now, I want to know, who are the top three people that have had an impact on making you the wonderful, vivacious soul that you are?
Well, I will have to say, in different ways, both my parents, my mom and my dad, and I will give them credit for everything, and who I was up to 21 and beyond too. But I will say 21 because I met my husband when I was 21 years old, and he has had a major impact on my life because he's also from Jamaica, but he came here when he was 8 years old. And so he was acculturated to American norms and, you know, and culture and the way you guys see things here. So when he met me at 21, I was still very Jamaican. So
he
taught me how to spell in American way, because we're on the British system here. So we spell things like color different from you guys. And
theater.
Yeah, all these different things. So he taught me. He taught me how to look at things through the American prism, you know, the norms. And how to navigate myself in the workplace and how to ask for what I deserve, like my raises.
Wow.
He was 1 year old, younger than me. But, you know, we've been together for 34 years now, and he just had a huge impact on my life. So, yeah.
That's
mom and dad and my husband.
And what's the third person? You can't say the Lord, because I know that you're the Lord.
Well, the third person I would say in my career would be, as a faraway mentor, is John Maxwell. I've just devoured his books for the last 20 years. And I've conducted a lot of his trainings with my own team. And I've just learned from him as a pastor / leader. Kind of like my model, you know? You know, I like leadership. I like ministry. I I'm trying to find a way to bridge that, you know, both of those things.
I love it. I love it. That's amazing. That's amazing. And you are a leader. I'm under the fundamental belief that you can't be a leader without being a reader. However, not all readers are leaders. True. You happen to be both. So tell me top three books that have impacted you and why.
Okay. So I mentioned Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. That has been a major influence on my life. I first read that book in 19 years ago. And I remember a few of his concepts throughout my career. Win-win. When I work with my team, win-win. Everyone should walk away with something, feeling in a conversation, in a, you know, in any kind of exchange. There should be a win for me and a win for them. If not, it's not successful. And it's on the premise that you seek first to understand, which is also from Kobe, before trying to be understood. So that really shaped how I led my team in the early years. Now, on the spiritual side, I love this book. It's not really spiritual, but it was written by Pastor Rick Warren's wife, Kay Warren, called Dangerous Surrender. And it talks about her internal struggle as a woman married to a famous pastor and her own insecurities and how she felt. I just thought it was very honest, such a public person, about, you know, their son who had a mental illness and how she overcame and how it took a pivotal moment, like her getting cancer, to really come to Jesus moment of self-reflection. So that really impacted me a lot. And so I love that book as well. And there are other books that I've read along the way, but I also love the John Maxwell's book, The 21 Habits of Highly Effective People.
Oh, I love that one. That's a classic. That's a classic.
Yes. So, because again, it's just his leadership styles and just what he talked about, leadership being influence and all these different principles that I've also adapted in my own leadership journey. So I love those three books. I would say those come to mind. I've read a lot of books, but those come to mind as standouts for different reasons.
And I know those are beautiful, beautiful classics, by the way. I know that faith plays a major role in who you are as a person, and your faith is outstanding. How has your faith helped you in the workplace?
Oh, my faith is everything to me. And I chose earlier to bring my faith into the workplace, right? So my faith has helped me because it's the foundation. And if you're gonna build a building, you know, my father was a contractor. So he talked to me a lot about foundation have to be strong. You know, the foundation of the building has to be strong. This is where they pour that concrete. I mean, I've been on job sites with them and see how they have to shore up that foundation. So I built my companies on my faith. Okay, what does that mean? What does that look like in practice? It means that I'm taking God's word and I'm applying it to how I treat my staff, how I treat problems, how I handle, you know, the competition, how I handle everything. What would Jesus do? And so I believe in integration of faith and work, especially as a Christian. Even my core principles of honesty and integrity, my core values, that came really from the Bible. And I will share this quick incident with you, right? So I had a major 500 client, Fortune 500 client, years ago. It was my best client. But I had told myself that I would always bring my faith with me in the boardroom. Boardroom was like this one, right? So I'm in a boardroom with this client, me and my husband, and it was an annual review of, you know, how we were doing. We were one of their top performers. And I remember sitting in one of those chairs, you know, in a similar boardroom, and the client was just lauding praises, you know, how good we were and, you know, how well we had done for him. And we had done a good job. But I remember after he was done, graciously saying, thank you, but we have to give credit to God. It's God who's allowed us to do this. And there was a hush in that boardroom. You could hear a pin. Wow. You could hear a pin drop.
Wow.
And I hadn't asked my husband permission. I just said it because I had promised God that I would bring him into the boardroom. And here I was now. And here was someone heaping praises on us when I know honestly, that if it wasn't for God, we wouldn't have been there. Because I met the contact for that particular contract at church. So I know it was God. So I didn't want to forget that, forget my place. So the meeting ended fairly quickly after that. And when I left, I couldn't help looking at my husband and saying, oops, I hope I didn't ruin that, you know, for us. But, you know, as we slept on it, the following day, someone from the client's office called me. It was a woman. She was having some problems. And she said that her boss, one of the guys was in the boardroom, said to call and talk with me because I'm a Christian and I would understand what she's needing.
Wow.
And that client remained our number one client for God a long, long time until they got bought up by somebody else. And so God just showed me, you know, don't deny me, okay? If you deny me before men, you know, men, I'm going to deny you, right? Before my Father. And that to me, that's too big a risk.
Yes.
So I bring my faith with me everywhere. And that's why I call myself a faith-based coach, because I want people to know this is really who I am.
Yes. And then, this. And how would you say, how would you respond to someone that says, hey, I know Sharon Gill is a Christian, and I really want to work with her. She's an amazing coach. She has raving reviews. And I'm not a Christian. I'm a Muslim. I'm an atheist. I'm a Buddhist. Whatever religion you feel me like. How would you respond to someone like that? So in other words, do you only work with Christians?
Not at all. You know, when I had my law firm, all my lawyers were Jewish.
Okay.
They were Jewish men, all my lawyers. My CPA was Jewish. Her assistant was a Muslim. So I'm come as you are. I just want you to know who I am. And if you're comfortable with me, I'm comfortable with you. Come as you are. I'm not going to try to convert you, but I'm going to give you principles that come from my foundation.
I love that.
And they're universal principles, so it's no big deal.
I love that. Yeah, we call them the Abrahamic faiths, right?
Yes.
Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. Now, Voltaire, the great French philosopher, had a very powerful quote.
The French philosopher, François Voltaire, said, I may disagree with you fundamentally, but I will fight to the death to give you your right to believe what you want to believe.
And that has been one of my guiding principles. I work with different people from all walks of life, all religions, all sectarians and such. And I always say that this is one of the fundamental cores of America, right? The freedom of speech and also the freedom of religion. And so that's the beauty of it. You know, we don't always have to agree, but let's not be disagreeable, right?
That's right. That's right.
You know? And so I want us to pivot a little bit to talk a little bit about your wonderful program. So let's talk about your coaching program. The first thing I want to talk about is, how does your program help businesses develop their personal clarity?
Their personal
clarity.
Clarity. Okay. Well, you know, when I get clients, a lot of clients that I get, you know, especially what they call them the discovery phase, where they're asking for like a free 30 minutes, I'll say, okay, so what is it that you're trying to do? And they'll have maybe four or five ideas in their head. They want to do, you know, they want to open a business, but they want to do a nonprofit as well, or they might be interested in ministry, or they have two business ideas. Well, we know that that's not going to work. It's not going to be effective. You have to be focused. You have to be clear. So I take them back to, what are your strengths? You know, what would get you up out of bed in the morning? What resources do you have right now? Because you have to have a practical side as well. Doing a nonprofit requires money, startup capital. You know, no one's going to give you donations until you've proven that you are an entity. So do you have the money to fund a nonprofit, knowing you're not going to get any money back in for a while? So I walk them through a real self-examination process. You know, I give them actually a long questionnaire too, that do a lot of soul searching, because sometimes they have hidden strengths and hidden weaknesses. And I, from the answers, I'm able to bring out, okay, here's what your strengths are showing up, you know, that may be suitable for this particular business. And so it's just walking them through, you know, what are your passions? What are your values? What's happening in your relationships right now with your husband, your family, your kids? Because sometimes not all businesses are kid-friendly, depending on how old your kids are. So what kind of sacrifice are you willing to make right now? So I really walk them through, really thinking it through, and then choosing the one thing that they can do now. The other things can come later on. But what can you start with now? The one thing. And it's based on values, your season of life that you're in, passion, resources. All these things put together will help to shape that story of what you are qualified and clearly able to do in this moment.
So you basically help them contextualize where they're at right now. In other words, let's take a snapshot where you're at. And it's very fascinating, because when you talk about taking a strengths assessment, or probably doing a SWOT, your strengths, your weaknesses, your opportunities, and what's the T on there again?
Threats.
Threat. Yes, thank you so much. That's the MBA class that's coming back together.
Yeah.
But then, Warren Bennis had a quote where he said, the effective leaders essentially take their weaknesses to the point where they staff around their weaknesses, to the point where their weaknesses become irrelevant. What do you think about that?
I like what John Maxwell says about weaknesses. He says, if you are a 3 in something, right? That's your weak.
Three out of what?
3 out of 10.
Okay.
No matter how hard you work, you may get it to a 5. So if you work really hard on that 3, it'll get to a 5. Real hard. A 5 is still not good enough. It's still not good enough. So don't work. This is his premise, and I agree with this. Delegate the weaknesses. If you are a 7 or an 8, work hard. Get that to a 9. Maybe even a 10. That's where your effort should lie. So sometimes we as entrepreneurs, and this is what happens with entrepreneurs. They want to do all these different things. You're not suited for those things. Maybe you're a visionary. Maybe you can see things out there. Maybe you can invent this thing, or you're gifted for this area, but you're not gifted for these other things. Delegate those things, shut those things, minimize those things, and focus on your strength area. And a lot of times we want to control everything, but we're not good at it, and we make a mess of it. So self-assessment is key. What am I good at? Like I never liked admin too much. I like leading. So I always hire the most brilliant administrators. They know all the programs, Slack, the different, online productivity hacks, and that's wonderful. That's wonderful. I feel like I'm the product and you guys make me look good, and we have to know what we're not good at, And don't worry about it. There are people who are as amazing at it.
Yes.
So that's another thing that leaders need to remember. Just delegate.
Know what you're good at. Know what you're good at. And you also talk about growth strategies. We're in the middle of a pandemic. Some say a depression, some say a recession. We don't know until we get out of it. But how can we grow during a pandemic? How do we grow? What are some growth strategies? What do you recommend in your
book? Okay. All right. So let's talk first about personal growth, because we have time to do a lot of that right now. There's nothing else to do. Yeah. So personal development, if you're a leader, a manager, an entrepreneur, anyone like that, content creator, whatever, you should be working honestly on personal development, personal growth right now. There are books being available in libraries for free just to help everyone. There's courses being offered for free. There's webinars every day. I mean, it's overwhelming, right? Yes. So when you grow yourself, first and foremost, you are then able to grow your company. You're going to grow in understanding, in strategies, in wisdom, in confidence. Those are the kind of people who grow industries, okay? So we may be limited right now in terms of, being in our office, but I have a client right now who I meet right here in my house, right here every single Monday, and they're growing, and it's all virtual, okay?
Wow.
I help them run their staff meetings and do their leadership training and development and help them with their strategies, and they're growing. But they have a growth mindset. They have a beautiful fancy office in Chicago, which they can't be in right now. So someone's even in Puerto Rico right now on this call.
Wow.
And they are planning e-events on this, and they do a lot of events, and the events were canceled. But I have heard some creative ideas, which I cannot share because it's proprietary, but of what they're doing for events, you know, for fundraising events, okay, virtual events. So what's the difference between that company and another company who says, oh my God, I have to cancel all my events. If you're a nonprofit, I have to cancel my charity events. I have to cancel this, or nobody's going to give anyway. That's not true.
Here's what I hope. I hope the proprietary idea that you have, I hope you guys license it, trademark it, copyright it, and please do come back and share it with us, because I work a lot in event spaces, and I work with a lot of companies that do big events. We're supposed to be a big convention, a big technology convention out South Florida with everybody you could think of, and I was part of it, and it got actually canceled, and she had to lay off all her staff or whatever. But if you come up with that idea, we will definitely help you. We'll pay you top dollar to get that word out. But I wanted to say something that you said before and not go past it. You talked about having a growth mindset, and there's actually a project that I'm working on right now, and they talk about specifically kids that come from an inner city background, and there's two different mindsets. So one of them have what they call a closed mindset, and one of them have a growth mindset. And the difference in terms of the outcome is this: whenever you look, a kid comes and he approaches a subject, let's say it's trigonometry, let's say it's quantum physics, whatever the actual lesson that teacher has, or it could be an adult, a college student, maybe a manager, a chief executive. If they approach whatever problem that they're having from a perspective of a closed mindset, is a closed mindset says, hey, this is giving me difficulty. A language I'm trying to learn, it's giving me difficulty. A program, a software I'm trying to learn. So a closed mindset, they're going to be more susceptible to it. But a growth mindset says this: I may not be as proficient in this particular area right now. Or I may not know this program right now. I may not be good at technology, Zoom meetings, and all this stuff. However, if I have a growth mentality, it's an inch, it'll be a century. What do you think about a closed mindset versus a growth mindset?
Well, it goes back to where, how did that start? Let's go back to inner city youth. How did that start? All right, so let me give you a real practical personal experience. So, okay, so as you may or may not notice, but I'm also an ordained minister. So in 2004, my husband and I actually launched a church, and we felt called to the inner city. So we launched a church in a inner city neighborhood, in a school. And our first and most consistent members were middle school boys. Okay, middle school boys. We met them when they were between the ages of 7 to 11 when we had our church. How do we meet them? We were in the neighborhood canvas, you know, giving out flyers saying, hey, we're going to start this church, come to church. We met these boys playing. What do boys play in the inner city? They play basketball. So they were shooting balls. They had on their shorts. And we handed them the flyer. We said, hey, we're having a church starting at your school on Sunday. So they said to us, how should we come to church? Of course, I said, come as you are. You know, like what Jesus would say, come as you are. Well, they came as they were in their basketball shorts on Sunday. So that was the beginning. That's who they were. Let me tell you something. I was the teacher for middle school, Sunday school. And I began to sow in those boys' mind. I said, you guys, all of y'all, you're going to be senators. You're going to be doctors. You're going to be lawyers. You're going to be these great men. It was mostly boys. It was 90% boys. And they were the church. You're going to be all these great things. And then you're going to come back to your neighborhood and you're going to make it better. Now, fast forward, we're talking about now 15 years, 16 years. Okay. Every one of those boys went to college, graduated. Some are in medical school. Some are in law school. These were kids that another person would look at them and say, inner city youth. I looked at them and said, this is what you can become. You're going to be lawyers, doctors, senators. So I put a different script in their head. Okay. We had a church, we had them for about 5 years, and then we disbanded the church for reasons. But they're still in our lives. When they're in a spot, in a jam, they call for mentoring. You know, I've had them come over. They were baptized in my pool at my house. Wow. And we really, when I tell you, Gibson, we invested in them. They were on what we would call one side of the tracks, and we were on the other side. So I brought them over to our side to see how African-Americans can also live. Okay.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that, because I always say this. I've done mentorship programs and inner city programs, and I always say this to people: the value of an inner city program, it's very simple. You can't be what you don't see. In other words, if you only see the pimps and the drug dealers and the prostitutes, and you know, I was speaking at a school once, and I do this every time I speak at schools. I say, what do you want to be? And typically in the inner city background, they want to be NFL players, basketball players. But this school was rough. The principal came to me. I remember her like it was yesterday. She was dressed in like almost like a Chanel suit. She was dressed in a nine, and wonderful sister. And she says, okay, you're going to be speaking to the whole school today. But she said, the way we're doing it to avoid riots and fights, you're going to have to go to each individual classroom. And it was going to take me, you know, several days to do it. I'm like, hey, listen, blessed are the flexible. They should not be broken. And so I went. And the first class, she said, you may not last. This is an elementary school. She said, they may look at you with your elegant Armani suit and rip it. They might curse you out, call you out by your name. She says, most people don't make it. But she says, okay, we'll see. She says, she looked at me up and down. She said, baby, I don't think you're gonna make it. Wow. She said, you look too put together. She says, you're not gonna make it. But she didn't know I have some roots. Anyways, so I go into my first classroom, and the kids are literally hanging from chandeliers. They're cursing. I mean, this is like a second, third grade classroom. I've never seen anything like this. So then I start singing, and I start, you know, tap dancing, something to get their attention. So it took me about like a good 10 minutes. I got their attention. The teacher was completely out of control, did not have management of that classroom. Got their attention. We start having fun. I start doing riddles and raps and just, you know, doing headstands, just anything to get their attention while I'm giving my motivational message. And then I get to the part where it's interacting with the kids. What do you want to be? I want to be a rapper. I want to be an NFL player. I want to be. And then this is what brought me to tears. The girls all said that they wanted to be strippers. Or in this case, exotic dancers. And this is an elementary school. And I almost like had a heart attack. I'm like, I'm just not hearing what I'm actually hearing. This is not actually happening. And I said, what did you say? It's like, yeah, I want to be a stripper. Oh, stripper, they got all the money. They got all the money. They got the Chanel bag. They got the Louis bags. Oh my goodness. You know, and I'm like, what in the world is happening here? Again, you can't be what you don't see.
Yes.
And then I pulled one of the girls aside. I said, is that really what you want to be? She said, yeah, my auntie is a stripper. She'd be coming home at bags of cash. Like her whole purse is full of cash, full of $1 bills. And so this is the type of mentality that's prevailing in the inner city. And so what I would do with these kids is I would take them and I would show them people like yourself. Who's a black professional? She's a business owner. She's an entrepreneur. Here's a black attorney. And I would bring black judges to come and speak with them. I would, multimillionaires that are African-American that did not play sports, that were not entertainers, did not know how to shuck and jive. They got all of it because of here. I always tell people, the greatest muscle is in between your ears. You know, when I go to kids, I say, well, I said, just look at me. I said, I couldn't go to the NBA, but I surely got my MBA and got some of this money. And I didn't have to rob nobody or steal for nobody. I didn't have to tap dance or, you know, hullabaloo. I didn't have to do any of that. It's all because of this muscle that I used to get it, you know? And so I love the fact that you said that with the kids. You cannot be what you don't see.
Cannot.
And how is modeling important in the corporate setting? How is modeling and being those examples, how is that important?
Well, I think in any corporation, I mean, you know, again, the leader has to have some kind of a blueprint, you know? Maybe this is such a successful company. What is your competition? One of the best person to study or is in business is really your competitor. What are they doing that's working well for them? Take the best parts. It's not copying. Take the best parts. Add your unique part to that, your USP, and go for it. Because there's really no original ideas.
What's a USP?
Unique selling point. What's different about you? So you have a USP. For example, I would say your USP is your big personality. Maybe it's how you dress. Maybe it's how you come across. But I believe everyone has a USP. That's another thing too in my coaching. I help people to embrace that USP. It could be your accent. Well, you may think this is a deficit. No, it's your USP. You know what you're
funny. It's funny that you say that because many years ago, I got a chance to speak to the illustrious Cindy Crawford. And we were talking, and I was talking to her about her modeling career. And she told me that she has a mold on her face.
Uh-huh.
And she said that was when she began to embrace it. Someone actually found her in a mall. And when she embraced that, that became the symbol of beauty, not just here in America, but all over the world. Something that initially she was ashamed of,
yes.
Initially she tried to hide, became the global symbol of beauty. I think at one point, Time Magazine and People Magazine listed her as the most beautiful woman on planet Earth. Can you imagine that? You
know, I remember this.
It was her mold.
Yeah.
And she was, at the time that I met her, I think she was like 50 years old. And my goodness, time definitely bode well with her, you know? And it was definitely the most beautiful woman I ever met was my wife, but probably a good second with Cindy Crawford. But it's taking your weaknesses and almost doing a judo strength.
Exactly. The perceived weaknesses, like Cindy's mold. You know, mold is like a, you know, it's something that's raising up from here. But I remember everyone trying to put a mold there with pencil because of Cindy. So that's exactly the point. Taking what others may perceive as a weakness. It could be a mold. It could be a scar. It could be your complexion. It could be, I mean, just so many things. Getting the confidence to embrace that thing as your USP, as the thing that makes you different. And each company too has to find a way, how do you do services different? When my husband started his law firm, right? We began it together, God, 27 years ago. And he said, Sharon, here's what I want to do differently from other lawyers. I want to actually have customer service. I want to have a good relationship with my clients because lawyers are notoriously bad at returning calls, following up with their clients, and keeping them informed. So my role in that company was to create a top-notch client relations department. That's what we call it, client relations. So our clients, they loved us. We were always proactive with information. Preemptive with everything, follow up. I mean, we made it like, it was like a business that did law. You see what I'm saying? Wow. It wasn't a law firm. It was a business that did law.
Wow, that's beautiful. Wow. I love the way you see that. And you want to help companies do this. And we want to make that available to our audience. What's the best way for people to get on your coaching program? Because I feel like during this time, I was talking to one of the best business coaches I've ever heard of. He's now retired, and I was getting some consultation from him, and he said firms will do better if they hire people such as yourself, because right now you got to run offense. You got to. They said statistics show that companies that do advertisement and marketing during recessions and economic challenge times, when we get out of it, those are the ones. What I've been doing is my previous clients and clients that I've done business in the past, I've been calling them up, helping them fill out government forms, helping them, being a resource of information so that when we get out of this, who do you think they're going to call? They're going to call me. Who do they business? They're going to give me business. Why? Because I'm helping them beyond my own personal benefit at this particular point. So how can people get in touch with you? How can they get on the Sharon train?
Well, I have a website, you know, it's even my name, SharonGill.com, and there's a contact form in there. You could just fill it out, you know, message me through that. And I'm very responsive. I have, fortunately, I have my phone on at all times. So my website is the easiest way, SharonGill.com. And what you just said, Gibbs, sounds so counterintuitive. Companies don't want to spend money during a downtime or time of scarcity in their minds, but that's the time when they really should be investing, like you said, in the development, in the coaching, in the marketing. Get it. This too will pass, like all viruses do. Yes. You know, it's going to pass. But yes, who is going to be left standing?
Yes.
Are those who prepare right now in the weak spot?
My one of my favorites, Cheesecake Factory, just went down.
I know.
Neiman Marcus just went down. I'm like, come on, these are like my favorite places. You know, they declared for bankruptcy. And have you always been a person of faith? Like, was there? What I'm interested in hearing is there something that happened in your life that proverbially brought you to your knees or brought you to faith?
So it's a two-part story real quick. So I got saved when I was 12. My grandmother was a big, big influence in my life. So
when you say saved, does that mean you were drowning in a pool and someone pushed you out of it? What does that mean?
Okay, I came to a point in my life when I made a decision that I was going to accept Jesus, you know, as the Lord, the ruler of my life.
So you surrendered, in other words, you surrendered yourself to God.
I did. I was 12 years old. I remember that. Remember that moment. And so from 12 years old to 18, 19, I walked pretty strong with the Lord. And, you know, which means I went to church, Bible study, did the right things. When I came to America, when I turned 19, I began getting interested in, you know, boys and kind of drifted a little bit. And so
boys will do that to you, won't they?
They really do. They take your eyes off the prize. So I met my husband, like I said, you know, in America, and I was 21, 22. We got married early and he wasn't a Christian. And so I further drifted, you know, along. And then I had my child at 27 and he was born 2 pounds, 1 ounce. I was 6 months pregnant.
Goodness. Wow.
It was a very difficult time in my life. And I made a deal with God. I said, God, I'm backslidden soon. But I promise you, if you save my child, I will serve you with the rest of my life and I will never backslide again. And that was 27 years ago, 28 years ago.
How bad was he?
It was pretty rough. He was 3 months in the hospital. They sent him on his real actual birthday.
3 months?
3 months. I was only 6 months pregnant. So, you know, he had to, you know, get fingernails growing and other things that weren't there.
Oh, just weren't my there. Goodness.
I always said to myself, you should never see a kid like that, you know, with no hair and having saran wrap to keep him warm. But, you know, that was my cross to bear. But it got my attention. It also got someone else's attention, my husband.
Wow.
When I went to church, he followed me to church. Like, I want to see what's going on. Then he became saved. I became a man on fire for God. Became a preacher, preaching so many churches all the time. We had our own church. God can do that to you, you know? So even in this pandemic, Gibson, which is a hard place that we are right now, God is still doing something. Wow. You know, he did it in my personal crisis was the birth of my son. We got through it, but our lives were better.
Yes.
It wasn't, I mean, that doesn't negate the pain of it, but our lives were better. And even this pandemic, sometimes it's very difficult to get out of bed for a lot of people because it's like Groundhog's Day all over again. It's like, today is which day again? People don't even know what day it is. It's like, if it's like the same thing is going to happen again today. But you get up out of bed, you pray, you read, and, you know, you just say to yourself, this too shall pass, and God is still in control.
I love your outlook on life. I love your outlook on overcoming. overcoming adversity. You acknowledge the pain, you acknowledge the suffering, but you're like the late great Robert Schuller. I used to love Mr. Schuller. He says, tough times don't last, but tough people do.
So we
have to realize that in this world, we will face persecution, but be of good cheer because he has overcome the world.
That's right.
And so I love that. I love that. Now, we're going to play a little game here.
Uh-oh.
Rapid succession.
Okay.
One word, okay?
Yeah.
What's the first thing that you grab in the morning?
Coffee. Coffee, then Bible, okay?
Your biggest inspiration in life?
Biggest, maybe I use a person, my mom.
What do you think people notice about you first?
Smile.
What do you hope that people notice about you besides your smile?
My compassion.
Compassion. Biggest flaw?
Sometimes I worry too much.
Biggest strength?
Able to get over the worry. Faith.
It's funny how your biggest strength is tied to your biggest weakness.
Mm-hmm.
I find that very fascinating. Human beings, we're so complex.
We are.
Too complex. What to you is the perfect and ideal age to be?
The age I am now. You know, I enjoy every season that I'm in. The age I am now.
Living in the present.
Yeah.
High school, awesome or terrible?
Awesome.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
What adjective best describes you when you're drunk?
Sleepy.
You said sleepy?
Sleepy.
Oh my goodness. Why do you love your best friend so much?
Because they have my back and they're loyal.
Awesome. Where do you want to go? Anywhere in the world?
Maybe Paris.
Paris. Mm-hmm. Beaches or snow?
Beaches.
What is your number one absolute biggest pet peeve?
Pet peeve. Let me think. A messy house.
Okay. I think that's for a lot of women.
Yeah.
Do you believe that there's life after death?
Yes.
How does someone instantaneously get on Sharon's good side?
On my good side, I would say be open-minded to learning.
Okay. How do they get on your bad side?
Being closed-minded, you know, just unreachable.
And how do you hope people describe you when you're gone?
That I was a woman of faith who helped people become the best version of themselves.
That's deep. I love that. Very similar to something I would say. Your least favorite attribute about yourself?
I would say, again, a tendency to, at times, get anxious, you know, about the quote-unquote uncontrollables.
Here's a funny one. Is it okay to sleep with socks on or off?
Socks.
Okay. Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Okay. What is your love language?
Hugs.
What's your vice?
Gummy bears.
Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn?
LinkedIn.
Favorite musical artist?
Let's see. So many, but I do like Teddy Pendergrass.
Pendergrass. Ooh.
Yep.
You said the man, the myth, and the legend.
Yes.
Are you right brain or left brain?
Which one's the logical side?
That would be the left brain.
Left, probably left.
Okay. Do you believe that opposites truly attract?
Yes.
Ask permission or ask for forgiveness?
Forgiveness.
Do you think chemistry instantly grows over time, like between you and your spouse?
Over time.
Does it do it automatically or do you have to work at it?
Work at it.
All right. Are you comfortable in silence or mostly comfortable during conversation?
I'm good in both, to be honest. There are times when I want both.
Do you prefer technology or more connecting with humans?
Humans.
TV shows or movies?
Nowadays, TV shows.
Books or magazines?
Books.
What's more preferable? If you had to do one thing, to be fair or to be nice, what would you pick?
Fair.
Describe what is the ultimate key to happiness in this life?
Well, I would say for me, faith, you know, me, honestly, faith in God and having good communications with those you love.
Awesome. Is there anything else you want to share with everybody?
No, this was, I think you've gotten everything out of me. I don't have anything much left except that, you know, just, you know, tell everyone to remain strong, during this time, and remain in hope.
Yes. Yes.
You know, remain in hope. Together we can get through this. Yes.
Someone that is very close to me, that's no longer with us. She used to tell me, my granny, she used to always say, Don't wait till my funeral to give me flowers. Boy, you better give me my flowers now. And I just want to say that thank you for just being such an inspirational light to so many people. You are the light of the world. You are an encourager. You make life a lot better. She used to always tell me, if the kingdom of heaven is within you, make sure everywhere you leave leaves a little bit of the kingdom in it. And that's what you've done. And it's truly been a plum pleasing pleasure and also a privilege to be in your presence. Thanks for helping us to pivot during a pandemic.
You're welcome. You should, that's your next occupation, okay? Profession. Go in the pulpit.
Thank you. Thank you for your time, okay? Thank you.
It has been a pleasure and a privilege. Please go to GibsonSylvester.com/podcast to find out more about this podcast and also to browse helpful resources that will help you in your personal and business life. Thank you very much.